The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Tuesday, Tuesday, May 5th. May the 5th be with you, or something like that. We have already done a, by the way, subscribe, rate, and review. If you like the podcast, feel free to recommend to a friend. Never mind you if you do that. Just, you know, text one friend and say, hey, check out this pod. I love it. You would love it too. Coming up today, we have a way too early mock draft last week, so we can take a way too early look at this year's gambling, focus on some awards, and we will break down the schedule whenever it comes out, obviously. You know, we'll have a full breakdown of week one gambling, division odds, team totals, et cetera. Some of those are still out, are already out there, which is kind of crazy, even though, you know, we don't know the schedule, but that's just, I guess that's just 2020 in gambling. And you can also check out, we had a really cool, not a mini pod, like 20-minute song, remembering Don Shula, who passed on Monday, the 90-year-old Hall of Fame, former Dolphins and Baltimore Colts coach, remembering him with, Pete Prisco and Jamie Eisenberg, both of who have close ties to South Florida. Also make sure and check out our show on CBS Sports HQ, our 24/7 streaming sports network. 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern every single day. Myself and the Super Friends break down the latest news, notes, and stuff from around the NFL. If you like this podcast, you will love that show. Joining me now to talk about the schedule coming out, MVP odds, much more, RJ White. What's up, buddy?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing okay. How are you hanging in there?
I'm hanging in there well. I listened to the Super Friends pod on Monday. I heard Breach make that a Revenge of the Fifth joke. Yeah. I was like, how do you leave Revenge of the Sixth out there? Wouldn't that be better since you go Cinco de Mayo, you go crazy, and then on the Sixth, you're hungover as hell. So that's, Revenge of the Sixth was right there, and he decided to go Fifth instead.
Yeah, that's a huge miss by Breach. Did you have a good are you a big Star Wars guy?
No, I like it. I've watched the movies, but I'm not like a huge, huge Star Wars guy. Don't, I don't know all the lore or anything.
You don't celebrate May 4th.
No. Okay. I will typically tell one person, May the 4th be with you, and if it's before noon, but I figure after that, everybody's already heard enough. So
I'm assuming like for our, and we're recording this, you know, at 2 o'clock on Monday, and our show, on May 4th for 4 p.m. on CBS. I'm assuming Sean will be wearing some sort of Star Wars t-shirt.
Probably a good bet. It's probably off the board in Vegas. It's such a heavy favorite.
Minus 700. Yeah. It's the equivalent of Mahomes, the Chiefs winning the AFC West, basically. And, before we get to how much of a factor independent of 2020, because I think 2020 is a whole different ball of wax, but like independent of that, how much does the schedule matter to you and when you're looking at win totals versus you already know the opponents, but how much does the actual schedule matter?
Yeah, I don't think it matters all that much since we do know the opponents. We know where they're going to play. You know, in 2020, they're going to scrap the international games. So that's going to be a little bit of a factor when you're thinking about these win totals, teams getting home games back. But in general, I mean, you know everything you need to know. Sometimes the sequencing might make it a little tough for some teams, but you know, I don't think it plays that much of a difference when you're that's why if it did make a difference, they wouldn't post the win totals early. You know, they'd wait till they came out and because they don't want anybody to get a little advantage there, since they tend to leak, you know, early in the day some team schedules. So Vegas isn't in the business of giving away money. So right. if it really had an effect, they would have held it until the schedule release happened.
That's a good point. And as you mentioned, no international games will be played. The NFL made that call. A little surprising, to be perfectly honest, that the NFL was willing to make that concession this early, but I think it makes a lot of sense. You cannot plan to have fans traveling internationally or players traveling. I think the players would be a little bit easier. You know, a lot of teams have private planes, et cetera, but so much of what goes into you're sending a bunch of people over to international, places, like whether it's Mexico City or London. B, you're having these huge events in those international cities that bring in people from those countries. And so I think you would be – it's a pretty easy pass for me. I mean, I'm surprised the NFL did it, but I think it's a pretty easy – it's a layup because you can't be telling – you know, people in London, what they're going to do, you know, like you just don't know what's going to be happening in the fall. So,
yeah, it's a partnership too. I mean, yeah. London has to want us over there. And, right. And even if they have a handle on this thing at that point, which I don't think they do at this point, you know, we just don't know what the landscape's going to be. And, you know, it takes two to tango. So if they're not comfortable with the way the crisis is developing in our country and we're not comfortable with the way it's developing in their country, I mean, either one of those things happen and you can't have games there.
I absolutely agree. Okay, let's get to – I think that that covers us for the news portion of the program. Was there something else that was announced that I'm missing on Monday? Monday was a weird day, obviously, the Shula dying and then continuing on through the – yeah, I don't think so. I think that was it. Okay, let's move along to MVP odds. You famously hit on Patrick Mahomes 2 years ago. Did anybody on our podcast get Lamar Jackson?
I'm not sure.
I think we talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a similar situation, you know, to the Mahomes thing. Guy, he got more playing time in year one, but you figured guy was going to get, you know, his first offseason of prepping. He could come in and take the league by storm. So I don't know if anyone hit it specifically, but it definitely had to be talked about.
Yeah, I don't know if we got on our pod. I know, I mean, there were people who had bet on it. William Hill has the odds up, our friend at William Hill. And let's make some picks here. So if you – Mahomes is the favorite, 3.5 to 1, which, I mean, look, 3.5, that's – it's I'm surprised it's not a little bit lower, but 3.5 to 1, again, is just not great value when you're talking about a guy, you know, the unknown of the season. You know, he got hurt last year. He missed time. Clearly wasn't going to win. Lamar Jackson, 6 to 1. Russell Wilson, 8 to 1. Deshaun Watson, 14 to 1. Tom Brady, 16 to 1. Breeze 18, Dak Prescott 20, Kyler Murray 25, Carson Wentz 25, Rodgers 25, and then you get into that's when the running backs start popping up with Saquon Barkley at 30 to 1. So I think that's probably anything under 30 to 1 is probably what we consider, all right. So what would be your top, who would be your top pick right now if you were making a pick?
Yeah, you mentioned Mahomes at the top. He deserves to be the favorite, you know, and he is. I don't love the value there, but if you want the guy with the best shot at winning, take him because he's the best player in the league right now. He's in a great offense, great weapons around him. They're going to probably be competing for the number one seed. So I think it just makes sense.
Offense somehow with Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I mean, yes. So if he stays healthy, I mean, he's got to be the favorite. So if you want to bet on a guy that you're going to be rooting for up until week 17, as long as he's healthy, he's a fine one to take. I don't mind that. But I just don't love the value, so I wouldn't take it at plus 350. I'd want a little bit more value, but I don't mind it.
Well, and I think too, like if you, let's say you're splashing on MVP bets and you're putting $10 to $25, you know, cause maybe you're putting $100, whatever it is. I don't think it's a terrible idea to take a third of what you're betting on the other people and put it on Mahomes. Like if you want to put, you know what I'm saying? Like you take some longer shots and put a third of that on Mahomes. That way you kind of cover your bases if he has an incredible season.
Yeah, as long as he gets it, because you can't do that with everyone. You would kind of want to have a little bit of his stock, a little bit of Lamar Jackson stock, but once you do that, then
the thing about Mahomes could have been MVP last year. Like he played really well. He just missed some games because of injury. it's just hard to win back-to-back MVPs. Like, they, like you have to have, you have to improve upon an MVP season. And that was always the argument for against Mahomes last year, that it would just be too difficult to pull it off. Who's your favorite value pick then?
Yeah, you mentioned Kyler Murray at plus 2,500. The last 2 years, we've seen a second-year quarterback make the leap, and he's been helped by a great scheme with great talent around him. I think all that applies to Murray with getting Hopkins in with Clint Kingsbury, you know, leading that offense. I think the Cardinals are a sleeper playoff team. I think people are going to have some buzz building for them as we get closer to the season. So if that happens and they make the playoffs and Kyler has a big year, he's going to be in the conversation. So at 25-1, I think – if you're just making one bet on MVP, that's probably the one I'd make because it just makes too much sense.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think the problem with that is Kyler was like 60-1 and now has dropped down to 25-1. I don't think it'll get lower than that. It's just, I think, and we should clarify too here. If you're betting on the MVP race, don't bet on anything other than a quarterback. Don't do it. I mean, the odds are just not good enough. Like, what would Saquon Barkley, I mean, Derrick Henry's 40-1, Chris McCaffrey 40-1. It's just not happening.
I mean, Michael Thomas had a record year for a receiver, and he didn't get a vote. You know, it was unanimously Lamar. So it's just not going to happen. Yeah. And we talked about Lamar earlier. That's what actually happened. You know, you brought up Murray was 60-1. Now he's 25-1. Lamar, if you got him early, was a long shot. He was probably 80-1, 100-1. I think it was. He dropped down to 30. So we stopped talking about him, and we started looking for other deep value shots that we could take. But that was the guy. Just because it dropped doesn't mean you don't take him. You
know? Yeah. Cam Newton at 66-1 is kind of hilarious. He didn't have a team. Joe Burrow 80-1. Daniel Jones 100-1. Nick Foles 100-1. Jameis Winston 100-1. I'm trying to find. So I think all of those guys are a little bit outside of the range I like. I think there is a sweet spot. And I agree completely on Kyler Murray. Like he would be, if I were putting it on somebody, I would put it on Murray. I don't hate Carson Wentz at 25-1 either. Matt Ryan 33-1 is fine, but you know, he's won it before. And so I think people would be comparing Matt Ryan's production to his previous MVP season for him to win. Frankly, I think Josh Allen at 40-1 is a very nice value as well.
Yeah. I don't know that the stats are going to be there. He's just not a guy that completes a ton of passes. So you're going to have a lot of running stats and some rushing touchdown. Maybe was going to need like 10 rushing touchdowns to kind of people make that argument of his all around value is what you got to look at. Cause Lamar didn't have great passing stats last year, but when you got 1,000 and whatever rushing yards and those rushing touchdowns and that brought him up to that level. So is Josh Allen going to do that? I'm not sure.
I guess the reason I say Josh Allen too is like, I think there's a narrative if the Bills can upend the Patriots dynasty that would play into the possible, like, you know, Derek Carr in 2016 was, you know, getting MVP buzz, and it's not like he was playing that well. I mean, they were winning games, but like, I just think maybe if Allen is playing clutch late in games and having good stats and not turning it over and his completion percentage jumps and they upend the Patriots, maybe it happens. The other two guys that I think are, actually, I'll say the other three guys I think are decent value. I like Baker Mayfield at 50-1. There's a real bounce back potential there for Baker Mayfield. A better offense, better protection in terms of adding Jack Conklin, adding Tristan Wirfs, or is it Jedrick Wills? Jedrick Wills, yeah. I call me a sucker, RJ. Phillip Rivers is 66-1.
Yeah, good. It could happen. I mean, they're going to be a good team. You know, we expect them to be a good team. The quarterback kind of held them back a little bit last year. I think if the Colts make a big run, you're looking more at coach of the year for Frank Reich, and we'll talk about, you know, other odds as we get to him, but it could be Rivers. I don't know. I think they might run the ball a little bit too much, for Rivers to get it since they seem to focus on that in the draft, getting Jonathan Taylor, play some good defense. I don't know that the stats are going to be there for Rivers, but narrative wise, you got to love it. If he goes there and they're competing for a number one seed, he's going to get some talk.
All right. So who would be your favorite long shot?
So you're talking about 100-1 odds earlier. You missed the guy that I have down. It's Sam Darnold. You know, he's one of the big long shots at quarterback, but he was a high draft pick. He was considered a big talent coming out. We've seen some quarterback lists that would have him number one of the last few draft classes coming in, even now. So
the program, Dan Orlovsky has him number one over Lamar Jackson.
So if he truly is that talented, I mean, you've got to like his odds at 100-1. He didn't have as much of a chance to make that year two leap last year with the absence due to mono, but he still did improve across the board. And he's playing what could be a wide open division. We expect the Bills are the favorites with the Patriots, you know, transitioning positioning at quarterback. But who knows? If the Jets step up and they win 10, 11 games and they steal the division, there's going to be some Sam Darnold talk for MVP. So 100-1, I like it as a lottery ticket.
But for the record, on my particular local, which, as I mentioned on the show, is I find it hilarious that a bunch of these guys who are on this list have their full names listed out. Like Cameron Jarrell Newton is 60 plus 61 to 1 to win MVP on this site. They had it. I swear they had Andrew Andy Dalton's full name is on here, which has just cracked me up to no end.
You know, 999 times out of 1,000, it's just a funny thing to look at. But you said Josh Allen at 40 to 1, and I'm thinking, which Josh Allen?
Oh, yeah.
List that full name there. That actually matters.
That's a good point. I don't think there's another Cam Newton they're worried about. I like the Darnold thing. But my point on Darnold too. I was going to say that on my local, Drew Locke actually has lower MVP odds than Darnold. Darnold's 80 to 1 and, Drew Locke is 67 to 1 on here. Like, you know, your prices may vary. Like Baker Mayfield is 33 to 1 on here. I don't love that. Kyler Murray's still 25 to 1. Maybe I splash on Kyler Murray right now. What do you think?
I like it. I like 25 to 1. I mentioned the formula for getting an MVP at quarterback the last couple of years, and he just seems to fit it really well.
Okay. Drew Locke, by the way, 25 to 1 or 125 to 1 on William Hill. Josh Allen, I got 47 to 1. That's not bad at all. Let me get this little Kyler Murray bet in real quick. Kyler Murray and Phillip Rivers, what do you think? It's too good bet.
Yeah, I would do Murray. I don't know about Rivers. Rivers is you can bet with your heart if you want, just don't put too much on it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk defensive player of the year. When you start to dig into these, and William Hill is doing this thing where they do individual pages for each of these, which is kind of interesting. Aaron Donald, 6 to 1. Huh. That's pretty good for a guy who's won it 3 times.
Yeah. You can always get individual pages on William Hill. There's a more bets button you click. If you're just on the futures page, you click through and you could see it like we're seeing it now. Debo was good enough to give us the direct link to the individual pages. So when you're talking about these, you know, you're typically looking for someone who gets a lot of sacks, but also, you know, a guy that is a key player on a dominant defense. Yep. So with that in mind, I'm taking TJ Watt. He's only the sixth favorite at +1600, 16 to 1, but he should have just as good a chance to win this as the guys ahead of him. I think that Steelers defense is going to be better than the Texans, the Rams, the, you know, maybe even the Bears, the Chargers that are on there. So I don't see why Watt wouldn't have just as good a chance as winning as guys like Mac and the Bosa brothers and TJ Watt and Aaron Donald.
Okay. I like that as well. You could certainly see the Steelers having a very good defense. And I agree, like, you know, Stephon Gilmore's 20 to 1, Jadeveon Clowney's 22 to 1. I think you're going to need an aberration type of season for those guys to win. I think an interesting name to at least look at would be Chandler Jones at 16 to 1 as well. If Kyler Murray takes a leap and becomes an MVP candidate, and the Cardinals are a playoff team and Chandler Jones piles up 15 plus sacks on a defense that takes a step forward as well, the addition of Isaiah Simmons and some veteran pieces, it wouldn't be crazy if he ended up winning. I think Myles Garrett at 25 to 1 is poorly priced. Myles Garrett can lead the league in sacks, and the Browns could be a playoff team, and he could easily win Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, if you'd like the Browns, that would be fine. He has to stay on the field also. I mean, if he has one screw-up, you know, how many games is he going to miss this time? 10? You know, yeah. The rest of the season, like, you just don't know. So that's a little bit of, you know, that he's in the watchful eye of the NFL is on him. So he better stay completely above board on the field, or he could lose him for at least a couple games, and then he's not winning.
Chandler Jones, second place last year. So, I mean, it's not that great.
He had, what, like 19 sacks, 19 and a half sacks?
Yeah, it's hard to follow that up. Derwin James is kind of interesting, too, at 25 to 1. You know, if the Chargers are, again, like, and I think the pieces that you're looking for are typically speaking, you're not going to win this award if you're on a crappy team. Like, you're going to struggle to do it, even though it's an individual award.
Right. You're going to have somebody that statistically stands out, though. And I don't know that Derwin James statistically is going to stand out. He's not going to have the tackles of a top linebacker. He's not going to have the interceptions of a top cornerback, you know, the cornerbacks that stand out. So even though he could be the best player on a good defense, you know, you'd have to kind of look past the stats. And maybe it happens in a year where, you know, nobody really stands out statistically. Then somebody can sneak through and win like that. But if somebody gets to, you know, 15 plus sacks, or somebody gets to 7 or 8 interceptions, it's hard for me to see Derwin James winning.
I mean, Derwin James had his rookie season. He had 3 picks, 13 passes defense, 3.5 sacks, 105 combined tackles, 4 tackles for loss, and 6 quarterback hits. Like, if he has that sort of season, but a little bit better, you know, assuming he comes back from his injury healthy enough, and the Chargers are a top team in the AFC and, you know, top 3 team in the AFC, and they're led by their defense in their run game, that wouldn't be insane. Yes.
Yeah, you got to leave people with plays that they're going to remember too. I mean, if he gets like 5 interceptions, let's say, and that's the thing about, we're going to talk about a defensive rookie of the year, and I'm going to bring this up again. When you're talking about interceptions, like, it's such a thin line between getting 2 or 3 interceptions to getting 5 or 6. You know, it's just one ball batted up in the air, that kind of thing. So if he gets to 5 or 6 and he returns 2 of those for touchdowns, you know, and one of them is like a long touchdown, people are going to remember that one.
It's like a pick 6 to win a game and, like, you know, I mean, late in the season,
You're going to say, oh, man, remember that Derwin James play, you know, that swung the division because he returned it 80 yards, and that's going to stick in people's minds. So he's going to get votes off of that. So when it comes to these type of votes, there's just one defining play that you can't really predict ahead of time, that if it happens, you can see that guy shooting up.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I agree. It's like, you need a Heisman moment type of thing. You also need, actually, which brings me to a good question. What about friend of the program, Marcus Peters, 100-1, a guy who likes to make splashy plays, is going to be on a good football team with a good defense, has a reputation for just make ball hawking and getting loose. Maybe he gets dinged if, like, he gives up some plays and coverage by the PFF. You know, PFF has changed this too. You know, it used to be just blind, like, you know, the impact that the analytics have had on these awards is kind of interesting. Would you say that in generally speaking, it's better to go longer shot with these defensive player of the year awards?
I think it could make sense. You know, my value pick here is Von Miller. He's been one of the best defensive players in the NFL since stepping into the league. He's never won the award. So if Denver is as good as I think they can be, I don't think they're going to, like, challenge the Chiefs for the best team in the AFC or anything. But if they improve behind Vic Fangio's second year, you expect him to have a bigger impact on, you know, with his coaching capabilities in year 2 when he's installing his scheme. I love Miller's value. He could have a lot of sacks. And if Denver's in the playoffs, it could be defense driven. And Drew Lock as a game manager, and all of a sudden people talking about, why hasn't Von Miller won this award? We should vote for him this year.
What about Cameron Jordan?
Cam Jordan, I think, had a lot of sacks last year. He might have been in the mix. If he has a good follow-up, maybe. You know, it's just hard to say that he's going to have a lot of opportunity. But, you know, playing the Saints, you have to score a lot. So if a team is throwing a lot against the Saints defense trying to score, the opportunity should be there. And it's not like he has a lot of great offensive lines in that division. You know, he's going to get 6 games against the Falcons, Panthers, and Bucks. So he could make a good impact there.
Averaged 13.5 sacks per season the last 3 years. He's had a crazy late, like, he's borderline making a push for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and another problem with picking a guy on the Saints is the Saints are always going to be defined by what happens on offense. It's Sean Payton, it's Drew Brees. So when they're going 13-3, people are going to give a lot of the credit to the quarterback. It's going to be hard unless Jordan is leading, you know, the league in sacks and, you know, 2 or 3 more than the next highest guy. He's up in that 19-20 range. That's what it's going to take, because they're not going to be one of those. You're not going to vote for him saying, oh, the Saints had a great defensive year, we should vote for their best defensive player. That's just not going to happen because they have Drew Brees on the other side of the ball.
All right. So you said your value is Von Miller. Who's your favorite long shot pick?
Speaking of Josh Allen, he's not even on the board at William Hill, but if you can find long shot odds for him, I like rolling with him as a second year player. He had 10.5 sacks as a rookie. He played part time. So if you can get him in the over 100-1, I kind of like him. As far as our options go, I'll say Ed Oliver at plus 100-1, you know, 100 plus 10,000, 100-1. Donald and Watt show that you can have an impactful season on the interior of the defense and win this award. I think both of them won twice in the last, 7 or 8 years. And Oliver has a chance to be the breakout star of what we think is going to be a good Bills defense, you know, talking about the narrative of if they win the division over the Pats and Josh Allen isn't lighting it up statistically, there's going to be some kind of a push to give it to somebody on defense. And I think he could be considered the breakout star, the best player on that defense.
Yeah, and he was not a full-time player per se last year, right? Played 54. Wow. He only played 54% of the defensive snaps last year.
Yeah. Those young guys, you mix them in and you don't want to overwhelm them too much, especially jumping from, he didn't even jump from the SEC, jump from Houston to the NFL.
So he had played 54% of the Bills snaps on defense last year, had 5 sacks, 43 total tackles, 8 quarterback hits, 5 tackles for loss, 2 passes defense, and 1 forced fumble. I mean, yeah. that's,
It's going to, you know, he's got to be playing, what, 70, 75% type of shot at this and getting into that.
But you would think he'd be able to.
15 sacks type range, but I think he could do it. I think their defensive line is upgraded. I don't think people will be able to key on him. And he was talked about as having an Aaron Donald type impact when he came out, you know, that kind of interior penetrating defensive lineman. So
smaller size.
And guy who's going to get after the quarterback. And as offensive lines are built from their tackles on in, you know, people focus on getting good tackles. When you get a great penetrator on the interior, it's going to cause some troubles for those guards and centers that people can't, you know, those aren't the type of caliber players that can handle the top talent. So we've seen Aaron Donald take advantage of it, J.J. Watt, and I think Ed Oliver could be the same way.
So Aaron Donald played on 84% of his team snaps last year. Well, you know what? Let's look at his I'm trying to do the sack percentage here. So he played on 90% in 2018, played on 90% of the snaps, 914 snaps, and 20.5 sacks. So it's 914 divided by 25, live math. That is a sack every 45 snaps. That's crazy. Last year, Ed Oliver averaged a sack every 111 snaps. So it would be I'm not expecting him to get a 20.5. Like, I think if he got to 15 from his spot, he'd probably have a shot, right?
Yeah, I think he'd have a shot there. And when you're looking at these long shots, you're not saying, I necessarily think this guy's going to be the best player, you know, in the league. I'm predicting that right now. You're saying, I think he has a shot to be in the mix at 100-1. So you take that and maybe he has a scoop and score, fumble recovery, touchdown. You know, he can move at that size. And we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah. J.J. Watt, by the way, played. I mean, you're going to need 90% of the snaps, I think.
That's fair.
Can Oliver play that?
I don't know. But if he has a great start to the season, it's going to be hard to keep him off the field. You know, if he's got, you know, 5 sacks in the first 2 games, 3 games, then they're going to want to use him. They're going to want to use him as much as they can.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will tell you who's a good bet to win Coach of the Year. Could Bill Belichick finally take one down for the first time in years? We'll tell you after the break.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Okay, so the Coach of the Year odds were released by William Hill. Oddly enough, Bill Belichick is the favorite at 17 divided by 2 would be 8.5 to 1. Is that right?
Yep, plus 850.
My wife can't do that basic math. It's incredible. She asked me what 99 times 4 was, and I said 396 very quickly. She was like, how did you know that? I was like, well,
yeah, that's a little bit of a mental trick that you just have to know, you know,
to just subtract 1 4 times.
Yeah. Just go 100 times 4. She knows, I'm sure. And then she just didn't know the shortcut.
Yeah. Devo says, if she didn't listen to that, don't worry, Devo. She didn't listen. Anyway, moving on. What an unnecessary shot. But Belichick, I think it actually makes sense for Belichick to always be the favorite because he's the best coach. And in particular this year, if the Patriots are good, he is going to win. Like, if the Patriots win 12 games, it's over. He's winning the award if the Patriots win 12 games the year that Tom Brady leaves. But Belichick never gets this award because they always expect Bill Belichick and the Patriots to be good. Bruce Arians 12-1 next. Kyle Shanahan 14-1, Mike McCarthy 14-1, Cliff Kingsbury 14-1, Frank Reich 14-1, and then Kevin Stefanski 15, Andy Reid 18, McDermott 18, Harbaugh 18. I think that these are poorly priced, RJ, because, not to insult our partners at William Hill, but to me, these should be priced. I agree with the Belichick thing, but like, Bruce Arians shouldn't be the second favorite. He's not going to win Coach of the Year if Tom Brady goes and dominates in Tampa Bay. This award is given to somebody who like does is like the biggest surprise at a head coach.
But they're not giving you the odds that of who they think, what the exact real odds are. They're giving you the odds of what people are going to bet. And you know the narrative is going to be there that the Bucs are going to be good this year because of Brady. So people are going to see Arians and they're going to say, it makes sense to me. I'm going to throw it on there. So even at 12-1, I mean, if this truly was priced poorly, you're going to see Arians shrink in this. You're going to see him go from 12-1 to the 20-1, 25-1 range. I doubt that happens. I think we can revisit this in August and he's still up there among the top two or three options.
Like Bill O'Brien at 50-1, I mean, the Texans could win 10 to 12 games, win the division, and he could get that award.
They win 10 games every year and win the division, and he never gets any credit for a coach of the year just because it always seems to be like something that happens to him, not that he's necessarily pulling the trigger. It seems like they're winning in spite of O'Brien, not because of him.
That's fair. And Harbaugh won last year, right? Didn't Harbaugh win last year?
Yeah.
I mean, I could have looked this up beforehand. Yeah. So Harbaugh, Matt Nagy. I mean, I guess my point is like McVay won in 2017. Jason Garrett won in 2016. What a world. Ron Rivera in 2015. Bruce Arians, 2014. Ron Rivera again in 2013. Arians again in 2012. Jim Harbaugh in 2011. Belichick last won it in 2010. I just think they give it to people who – they give it to the biggest overachieving team. And that's what
– I mean, and it makes sense to me that Belichick's a favorite because if they do win, you know, we should expect it because he's a good coach, but people aren't. If he does it with Jared Stidham at quarterback, there's going to be a big push to give him the award. It's going to be like they stayed put and he gets credit for some of that too because he's the one making the decisions to stay put at quarterback. And if they do and he coaches them to a division, a number one seed, which is in the realm of possibility because it's the Patriots, I mean, there's going to be a big push to give him the award. So I wouldn't bet it at plus 850. I don't think you bet the favorite in these type of wide open awards, but it makes sense for him to be the favorite. I wouldn't trash that at all.
Cliff Kingsbury's pretty smartly priced at 14-1, I guess. Because I mean, if the Cardinals take a leap, he's a guy that can get it. What would be your if you were making a pick for this? What would you go with here? Your top?
Yeah, pick? I think my best value here is McDermott at +1800. You know, we've talked about the Bills could be that team that breaks through, and he's shown the capability to maximize the Bills' ceiling. When they look like a 6-win team, he can take them to 8 or 9 wins. So if they're the talent of an 8 and 9 win team, they could be competing for, you know, 11, 12 wins and maybe even challenging for a number one or number two seed. So if this is the year they break through and they beat the Pats for the division and the Bills are division champions, I mean, he's going to have to be one of the favorites at that point.
Yep. And, you know, I actually thought McDermott had won it. He, in 2017, when McVay won it, McDermott could have easily gotten it for dragging that Bills team to 9-7. They had no business being 9-7 in the playoffs. So he was one of the candidates. What's your bet? I guess McDermott's the best value pick. What's your favorite long shot pick?
Yeah, so we're looking for a team, like we said, that could exceed expectations. And when looking at the guys at the bottom, there's no true long shots unless you want to go with Bill O'Brien, like we said, at 50-1, or Marone at 75, and nobody's taking Marone for this award. So I like Vic Fangio the best at plus 3,000. And the Broncos did a great job upgrading their team around their second-year quarterback. If he is even serviceable, you know, he didn't have to be great. But if he's like Joe Flacco-level good, like that solid, you know, prime Flacco run, they're going to make a playoff run. And if they do, Fangio is going to be in the mix to win this if the Broncos are in the playoffs. So +30 to 1 seems like the most realistic thing. That's the same type of odds you can get on guys like LaFleur and Vrabel, who just took their teams to the AFC Championship. So if they're not going to get any buzz unless they have like a huge number one seed, 14-2 type of year, they're not going to get any buzz for this award. So I would much rather go with the value with a guy like Fangio.
I would say that I agree with that completely. I actually legitimately believe that Adam Gase is good value at 30-1. I know that everybody hates Gase and doesn't want, like, the internet hates Adam Gase, but the Jets could win 10 or 11 games and win the division. Like, that's, to me, that is not even remotely out of the realm of possibility.
I think with the way the Jets are built, that if that happens, it's going to be Darnold having a huge year, and it's going to be Gase getting the most out of Darnold. So I just rather roll with Darnold MVP at 100-1 and just play that lottery ticket. And that's kind of my Jets are great lottery ticket is Darnold at 100-1 MVP over Gase winning this award at 30-1. It's probably more realistic, like you said, he's going to be in the mix. But I'd rather take my take my stamp on long shot with Coach of the Year somewhere else.
No, that's a good point too. I would also add that Matt Rhule and Ron Rivera are interesting picks for me because both teams will have five or five and a half win totals. I would expect when those are open after the schedule. And if the Panthers or the Redskins go out and win 8 games, I think those one of those either one of those guys will get a lot of love. So if you think that the Panthers might be better than people expect, and it's possible with the way that they've done this offseason, you could see, you know, if Matt Rhule, first year coming from college, you win 8 or 9 games, I mean that would shock a lot of people, and he would get a lot of buzz.
Same thing with Joe Judge too. I mean, and you got to remember, there's going to be an extra playoff spot this year. So a team like the Giants or Redskins that is completely off the radar right now could sneak into the playoffs with a 9-win season. And if they do, you know, there's no reason that people wouldn't vote for Joe Judge or Rivera.
The other name I would throw out too, since we want to cover every single team, Anthony Lynn at 30-1. You know, they ditched Phillip Rivers. They're going with Tyrod Taylor. They have Justin Herbert too. So, I mean, you're dealing with Tyrod Taylor, a guy that people believe is a low-end starter, and Justin Herbert, a guy who's a rookie. They're going to go with Anthony Lynn's style, which is running the football, using play action, and playing a lot of defense. It's a team that can be really good. Like, they have all the pieces in place to do it. And Anthony Lynn, while maybe sort of a bit of a punching bag in terms of, like, you know, how – he is beloved for the stuff he does off the field. So I think if they sort of like those features pop up every year, and good for him for doing it. So I could see Anthony Lynn, you know, as a minority too. I just think there's a lot of different factors that could come into play for pushing him for a candidacy if they were winning 11 or 12 games.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not like Rivers had great stats that year. They went 12-4 and the Chiefs beat them out for the division, right? It's not like Rivers was lighting up the scoreboard. Right. So if you have that type of season again, you know, it's perfectly in the realm of capability that Taylor plus Herbert, whenever he takes over, if that happens,
could
do that at some, you know, a similar season. And if then they're 12-4 after getting rid of Rivers, he's going to get a lot of buzz.
Yep, for sure. Okay. Offensive Rookie of the Year award. No surprise. We've covered on the Pick Six podcast show that Joe Burrow is the favorite. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has moved down to 6-1. Tua Tagovailoa at 8-1. Jonathan Taylor 12-1. Henry Ruggs 14. CD 14. CD Lamb 14. Jerry Jeudy 16. DeAndre Swift 18-1. Cam Akers 20. Herbert 20. J.K. Dobbins 20. Justin Jefferson 20. Anybody stand out to you as a top pick here?
Yeah, the top pick, it's hard to make anyone but Burrow the favorite. You know, plus 275, I still think that's good value. We know he's going to get the job from week one. They just got rid of Andy Dalton. We don't know that Tua's going to get the job from week one. We know Herbert's probably not. So if there's a quarterback that's set up to have a big statistical season out of these guys, it's going to be Burrow. So if I'm going to go with one guy, plus 275 isn't great value on this prop, but he's got to be the favorite. The narrative's behind him. So if you want to, like I said with Mahomes, you want to bet the guy that you think is going to be in it the whole year and have a great shot of winning, just take Burrow at plus 275.
Yeah, you almost wonder if they're in like a little bit of a – because remember, I like Sam Darnold as value. I think I got Sam Darnold like 20-1 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, and he looked like he came out as the favorite, and then Baker comes in for an injured Tyrod Taylor in 2018, and then Baker just took off, and it should have won the award in my opinion, but Saquon Barkley ended up getting it, I think. So this I don't mind. I mean, like, I think Burrow is the pick probably because of the playing time and all that. I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire though. 6-1. If he gets all the reps in that Chiefs offense, come on.
Yeah, but how much is he going to get to run? Like, he's not going to pile up a ton of running yards because they have Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. So you're not really grinding out first downs.
Kareem Hunt led the league in rushing in that offense. Granted, different quarterback.
Yeah, it didn't have Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. I mean, what if he has 1,500 total yards?
Yeah, he's going to have, I think, a huge receiving season. That would do it. If people start talking about rookie receiving record for a running back and you start seeing his name put up with some other great running backs in their first year, then you're going to say, wait, this guy might actually be really good. We're going to have to vote for him for Rookie of the Year here.
The last time, only once since 2010, has a non-running back or quarterback won it. That was Odell Beckham in 2014. Percy Harvin won in 2009. And then you have to go all the way back to Anquan Boldin in 2003 to find a non-rookie running back or quarterback. And so your value here, I think, tends to be obviously on the quarterbacks or running backs. I would steer clear of Ruggs, Lamb, Jeudy. I don't know that I would trust Jonathan Taylor and, you know, DeAndre Swift, I think, are bad values. Even J.K. Dobbins, because they're potentially in timeshares. And look, in fairness to my point, Clyde Edwards-Helaire might have to deal with Damian Williams and being eased into the workload. So I think there is something to be said for the fact that maybe Burrow is just good value here.
he's good value. You set up my what I wanted to say in the value pick perfectly there. The award typically goes to quarterbacks or running backs. It's a great receiver class, so you're gonna feel the push to take a guy like Judy or Lamb or one of those guys. But just they don't win those receivers don't win the award. You have to have such a good season to win the award as a receiver that you should pass on those guys. So I think the best value has to be at running back, and the one I like is the one you didn't mention because I think you probably think he has a better opportunity than these other guys, and that's Cam Akers at +2,000. You know, big opportunity for touches with Gurley gone. We didn't see a ton out of Henderson to make us think that he should be the lead back in this system. They used their first pick of the draft on him. They didn't pick until the 50s, and their first guy was Cam Akers. That's got to tell you something about what they want to do with him on offense. He had a great combine. He should come in and get a ton of touches right away, and I think he's the guy that could have that 1,100 to 1,200 rushing yard season and win the award.
Josh Jacobs probably wins it last year over Kyler Murray if he plays all 16 games, by the way.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I like that. Akers, you got a bank on touches. Now look, I mean, maybe Marlon Mack goes down and Jonathan Taylor is the workhorse for the Colts and they win 13 games and then that's a cakewalk for him. I agree. I think you avoid, I wouldn't touch Herbert because we expect Tyrod Taylor to play plenty. Tua at 8-1 isn't enough value for me. I don't think with Ryan Fitzpatrick hanging around there. And who's your favorite long shot? I'll tell you what receiver I like.
Yeah, Michael Pittman is not getting the respect he earns. I said his name a lot in the draft pods leading up to this. You know, and then he went number 34 overall, probably higher than a lot of people thought he would. He was the first guy the Colts drafted. We talked about Akers being the first guy the Rams drafted. Pittman was the first guy the Colts drafted over Taylor.
Frank Reich said he's like, tell me why this guy can't be the best wide receiver in this class.
And despite all that, he's only 50-1. You know, that's longer odds than receivers drafted much later. KJ Hill went in the 7th round, and he has better odds than Pittman to win this award. Tyler Johnson went in the 5th round. He has lower odds to win this award. That doesn't make any sense to me. He has a much clearer path to targets than several of the other receiver prospects, even in his tier, like KJ Hamler or LaVisca Chenault, those type of guys that went in the 2nd round also. And they have lower odds, you know. So Pittman just 50-1 screams the best value. We don't think receivers are going to win it, but there's no reason he should be that far out outside of the top receiver group.
I agree. I think that's a great call. The other one I like is Brandon Ayuk at 33-1. If you listen to Kyle Shanahan's post-draft press conference, he made it very clear he thinks Ayuk can play all the different positions, that he's not going to be pigeonholed into one spot, that he can move around, and if you watch his film from Arizona State, he makes plays in space, and that is perfect for a Kyle Shanahan offense. You can use him in the screen game, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it would be – I like Ayuk and Pittman.
And they traded up. They traded up for Ayuk too. You have to kind of factor that into.
They almost took him at 13.
Yeah, they really like him. You know, when you trade up and target a guy like that, or you use your first pick on a guy, that's different from like the Jaguars taking Chenault, where they. You know, if Chenault would have been available at the same time Michael Pittman and T. Higgins were, you know, maybe they would have went in a different direction. You just don't know. Yeah. But if you trade up, you're specifically targeting that guy that you get when you trade up, and the Niners did that with Ayuk, so they probably going to feature him prominently in that offense.
Yep. Defensive rookie of the year. No surprise, Chase Young, the favorite, 3.5-1. Isaiah Simmons, 8-1. Patrick Queen, 11-1. AJ Epenesa of the Bills, 14-1. That's sort of surprising, I guess. Jeff Okuda, 20-1. Kenneth Murray, 20-1. Kelavon Chaisson, 25. Javon Kinlaw, 25. Derek Brown, 25. CJ Henderson, 25. And then you start getting. So, what do you think about the odds there as the top pick with Chase Young?
Yeah, this can be anyone. We've seen edge rushers win it with good sack seasons. We've seen tackle monsters at linebacker win it. We've seen cornerbacks that rack up a lot of picks win it, you know, 5-plus picks. Marshawn Lattimore, I think, and Peters. You know, you mentioned Peters earlier. He had 8 his rookie year. He won it.
2017 and Peters in 2015.
So when I did my prep on Sunday, I started doing my notes to be prepped for this, you know, recording it the next day. I loved Patrick Queen. He was at 18-1 at that point, and Epenesa was the third best at 11, whatever he was. And I said 18-1, this guy's going to get a ton of tackles. He's going to quickly emerge as the leader of that defense, as a player at a position that they really need. He's going to play a ton because of that, because they don't have a lot of other good options. So I expect him to be on the field the whole time. I think he might quickly emerge as the leader, even at his young age, of that defense, and he'd just be a tackle monster. Now he's down to 11-1. So within 24 hours after taking those notes, went from 18-11. Somebody must have agreed that 18 was ludicrous. Even at 11, I think he could be in the mix there to win it. So I still like the value there at 11.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think if you are banking on, if you're trying to pinpoint somebody, now look, both the Bosa brothers have won it. but they're like transcendent pass rushing talents who were pro ready from day one. And you knew it coming to the draft, and they were both top five picks. Aaron Donald has won it. Sheldon Richardson has won it. I just think though that like if you look back at the history, you know, dating back to like, you know, the last 10 or 15 years, the best bet is guys who can the tackle numbers, making an impact on a playoff team as a young player. And so I agree with you. I think Queen and Murray are probably the two best values there as guys who could step in and make a bunch of tackles on good football teams.
Yeah, and that's how Darius Leonard won it. That's how Kuechly won it. Yep. It's just they come in, they automatically just make this huge difference, getting 10 tackles a game every game.
I think you need a couple of interceptions too.
And I think these line, I mean, you, I was saying earlier, you just can't predict the interceptions. The balls can bounce different ways, but these guys could do that. I don't see why either one couldn't. Queen or Murray could do that too.
For the record, Darius Leonard had two picks, and so did Luke Kuechly in their respective rookie season. Von Miller won it back as a rookie. He only had 11 and a half sacks.
And that's the thing where that's why going with Chase Young isn't, I mean, I wouldn't take him at the value at plus 350, but when you are the number one defensive guy coming out like Von Miller was, that's the guy everybody's looking at. And if there isn't a breakthrough option otherwise, if somebody isn't getting 8 interceptions or 150 tackles or whatever, however much you need, it's going to default to that number one guy. So Chase Young could get it with 11 sacks, 12 sacks, just because nobody else has a breakthrough season. So he's kind of like the default king of the hill, and you got to come and get it from him.
Yeah, and Bradley Chubb could have done the same thing. He had to put 12 sacks, I think, in 2018, 12-plus. But Darius Leonard just had a transcendent season, so Leonard stole it from him. Comeback. All right, you have a long shot, sorry.
Yeah, so my value pick on this is going to be Jeff Gladney at 50-1. He's going to have to play a lot right away. Vikings lost 3 cornerbacks in free agency. Quarterbacks are going to pick on him because he's a rookie. And so the opportunity, I think, is going to be there for him to get to the 5 interception to 6, 7, 8, whatever, that he's going to need to compete for this award and kind of steal it away. So I like him at 50-1. And if you want to go longer than that, Logan Wilson is 80-1. He was drafted by the Bengals top of the 3rd round. He should have to play a bunch right away because they don't have a lot of talent at linebacker. So he could be a guy that, so just like Darius Leonard, gets 140, 50 tackles, whatever, and people are like, hey, this defense is playing better than I thought. Burrow's kind of leading them to the playoffs, but you got to give credit to the defense too. Why are we not looking at Logan Wilson at 80-1?
All right, I like it. Comeback player of the year. I'm actually sort of surprised they put this out, but what are you gonna do? Ben Roethlisberger 3.5-1, Rob Gronkowski 3.6-1, JJ Watt 6-1, Stafford 7-1, AJ Green 8-1, Cam Newton 10-1, Alex Smith 12-1. Nick Foles 12-1, Myles Garrett coming back from a helmet suspension 25-1, Antonio Brown 25-1, Alden Smith 28-1, DeSean Jackson and Baker Mayfield 33-1. Your thoughts on the top?
Yeah, some of these seem like you can light your money on fire with guys like Cam Newton and Alex Smith, the guys that aren't going to play. This prop actually opened with Gronk as the favorite. You know, it came out right in the wake of him unretiring. Now Big Ben's the slight favorite at plus 350. I think that's who has the best chance of winning. He obviously missed the whole year. His fill-in quarterbacks were so bad that it likely cost the Steelers a playoff spot. Everybody says all Ben had to do was get healthy and be healthy in that defense. You know, they would have really made some noise in the AFC. So if he can stay healthy this year and take the team to the playoffs, it's easy to see him winning this one.
Yeah. So the previous winners include Ryan Tannehill, who came back from Adam Gase, Andrew Luck, who came back from a horrific injury in 2018. And then before that, it was like back to, it was 4 straight guys, Keenan Allen, Jordy Nelson, Eric Berry, Rob Gronkowski. Barry came back from cancer. The other 3 guys came back from torn ACLs. The year before that was hilarious. Philip Rivers in 2013 coming back from a bad season. That's all it was. He didn't change teams. He didn't get hurt. Nothing bad happened in his life. He just threw a bunch of picks in 2012. And he was like, that's why it's like weird. You don't know what the criteria could be. Peyton Manning the year before that coming back from multiple neck surgeries. In 2010, Michael Vick came back from prison.
Yeah, that coming back from a bad season would be your only reason you take a guy like Baker Mayfield at 33-1. Or, my guy that's my long shot is, Jared Goff at 40-1. It was just 2 years ago he looked like a dark horse MVP pick, at least in a world where we didn't have Mahomes, you know, looking unstoppable. So if the Rams get back on track and Goff has another season like he had that year, 4,600 yards, which he had last year too. I mean, he put up 2 big yardage totals. And if he gets a 30 plus touchdowns with not a ton of interceptions while the Rams are in the playoffs, he's going to be in the mix to win the award, even though he's not coming back from injuries, coming back from just being bad last year.
Debo threw this one in Slack at me, but I kind of agree. I don't mind Trent Williams at 50-1 as comeback player of the year. Now, it's going to be hard pressed for a lineman to win it, but people love to hate the Redskins. They were treated him in terrible fashion. He is still in the prime of his career. He's had injuries, you know, the brain tumor stuff. If he comes in there and the 49ers are dominant in the run game and people are talking about how Trent Williams is playing so well and he gets 16 games in, it's not a crazy idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't envision how that would happen because it's not like the 49ers are going to take a step up from where they were last year. They're already in the Super Bowl. So it's not like he's going to make a huge difference in taking a bad team and making them good. And then you look at the fact that I think the sack numbers would have to be like historically low. If Garoppolo gets sacked 10 times all year, then they're going to be like, well, you know, the thing was Trent Williams. But he's going to come in and all he's really looking to do at this point is solidify a very good left tackle that was there up until this point. If he is solidifying that spot and it's business as usual, it's going to be hard for him to gain the notoriety to do it. I think all these other guys on this list would have to play poorly. Like if Ben gets hurt again, if Goff sucks again, if Nick Foles doesn't have a good year in Chicago, he's kind of a guy I liked at a value going in there. Assuming he gets the quarterback one role, he could have a big season and take them back to the playoffs because they still have a good defense there. If all those guys are bad, you're just kind of looking around for someone. You're like, hey, Trent Williams played 16 games. He made the Pro Bowl or he's all pro. Let's give it to him.
There's better long shots at 50-1 is what you're saying. What about David Johnson at 40-1?
Yeah, when I sent these odds into Slack and said somebody pick it up and mention a long shot, you know, after you say the guys that were best, he was kind of the guy I keyed in on. You know they're going to use him a lot after what they traded away to get him. And Bill O'Brien wants to look like a genius, so he's going to feed him the ball, three downs. As long as he stays healthy, you could have a big statistical year. And if none of these quarterbacks happen, like I said, if Ben gets hurt again, then you could definitely see a world where David Johnson has the stats to win this award.
All right. Would you rather have Baker Mayfield 33-1 comeback or 50-1 MVP?
I think I would take MVP. Like you said, it's just hard for all those cases you listed were coming back from injuries or some other extenuating circumstances. So it's hard to have a guy that is just bad like Rivers was and has a huge year. And as young as he is, I don't know that they would want to give it to him as a comeback player in his third year. So he hasn't really established a baseline to come back from, you know, after 2 years in the NFL. So I would take him in MVP if he just blows up, take those longer odds and see if you could win that one.
All right. I would take MVP as well, I think. I don't think it's out of control that Baker Mayfield could win MVP. I am buying Baker Mayfield stock before this season.
It's going to be hard though, because they're probably up to win the division, you know, for people to give him buzz. And are you beating Baltimore? Are you beating Pittsburgh with that defense? And we assume a healthy Ben. It's going to be really hard for them to win the division. That also ups the difficulty though. If they do win the division, they'll be like, hey, like they beat Lamar Jackson and Ben Roethlisberger. Give it to him.
I think if either Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield wins their division with 10 plus wins, they're very good chances of winning the MVP.
I would agree.
Okay. All right. So that you can sort of think about that. We have plenty of gambling pods following the release of the schedule that will come your way. We'll drag RJ back on for another podcast, I am sure. Tomorrow we're going to talk to Jared Dubin about the best offenses in the NFL. So subscribe, rate, and review. RJ, thanks as always, buddy.
Thank you.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount+.